You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down, featuring in-depth discussion and interviews with stand-up comedians on the art of stand-up comedy. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down.
All right, there we go. Welcome to another episode of Stand Up, Sit Down. Your host, Nick Perdue. I'm here with the hilarious Big Pimpin' himself, Tony Klein. How you doing?
Yes. You're doing great, man. This is Friday, you know. I'm on Black Hollywood Live.
Yeah.
I'm not black, so I wore as much black as possible to compensate. Hopefully you guys would notice that.
Yeah, I want to say you are probably one of, like, the most low-key black white guys I know.
Yeah. I'm from the Midwest. I'm from, like, the most white place you can possibly be, Waukesha, Wisconsin. So, I don't know how that happened. I just happened to, my best friend growing up is black.
The only black person in Wisconsin, you were like, that's my best friend, dude.
Yeah. We had, still is to this day. He lives in Ohio, though, but, keep in contact.
There you go.
Yeah, and that's how I got here on a Friday. Just fucking going through traffic. Sorry, I'm sweating.
So now let me ask you, because Wisconsin, right? You know, you said you're up north, right? Yeah. You're in the middle of America.
Yeah.
Is it funny up there? Like, is there any comedy up there? Like, what's, you know? I feel like it's a slower state.
I feel like that's where I got into comedy, because if you observe anyone in the Midwest, you can't help but just laugh, because you're like, holy crap, these people are insane. Just insane. It's just, and, like, they live there for some reason. I don't understand. It's cold 9 months out of the year. It's like Russia cold. Like, my dad, when I got my license when I was 16, told me to, like, keep an extra jacket and gloves in my car in case I run out of gas. I'm like, well, shouldn't I keep gas in my car in case I run out of gas? Right. He's like, no, you don't want to die of hypothermia. I'm like, where do we live that I could die from running out of gas? Like, yeah, what happened to Tony Klein? Oh, he ran out of gas, 16 years old, done. Like, that's a terrible way to go out, you know what I mean?
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's where I'm from.
So I say you moved to a warmer climate.
Yeah, 20 years old, I was like, I'm out of here.
There you go. But okay, but yeah. In high school, were you the funny kid?
No. Well, I was, but because I guess class clown would be the title, but you know, but like it wasn't because I wanted to be, just because I didn't want to do homework. And teachers don't like that kind of stuff. You don't do homework. Kids do your homework. I was just good at taking tests and stuff, which pisses off teachers, because if you don't do the homework, they feel like their job's not there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't need to do the homework. And then I do good on the tests and pass stuff, so. It helped me out until I got the classes in college, when you have to do, like, you know.
You actually have to study.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, there's a different, it's a different, like, approach, but.
You can always cheat.
You could cheat, you know. But, you know, you're lying to yourself. You got to shave at some point in time. That's, you can't look at yourself in the mirror. At least I can't. I have moral values, you know what I mean?
I mean, I guess that, because, like, in high school, I cheated. Like, my senior year. But this was, like, you know, like, towards the end where you already knew, like, you know, senioritis hit. You know what I mean? So it was like, why am I still out partying, having a good time? You know, and then you go in and you take a test or whatever. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. I'm not, like, you know, I'm the moral compass and stuff like that. I've never done anything wrong in my life. But when it comes to cheating and stuff, like, I don't want to get busted, because then it goes against the whole thing of me, like, it's my stance. I took a stance, drew the line in the sand. I'm like, look, teachers, I'm not doing the homework. I'm going to do good on the tests. If I got caught cheating, that would ruin my whole rep. You know what I mean?
That's true.
That's why.
That's true.
I have plenty of friends that cheat.
So when did you really, like, want to do stand-up? Like, what was the catalyst?
Here's the thing. Here's the odd. It's a really weird twist. I actually, like, was doing acting stuff out here, commercial work and some indie films and stuff. And then my agent was like, you should take an improv class.
Okay.
But I was also taking a class, and that stuff's like $250 a month per class. I'm like, I'm not trying to spend $500 a month. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, you can drop one class. But I found a cheap, like, improv class through LACC, Community College.
Mm-hmm.
Then I filled out the wrong course form and took a stand-up comedy class. And I walked in there, and I'm like, look, did you have the stand-up comedy class? I'm like, not really, but I guess. And it was just like a workshop thing. I didn't do like a set at, like, the Comedy Store after it was done, after like 6 weeks. But I got into it, and then I kind of like, you know, still acting was still my main thing. And then I wanted to get back into it again. Then I got in a motorcycle accident like 3 years ago. I was like, I should probably get back into stand-up again. There's like things I wanted to do before I die.
Yeah.
I almost died. I'm like, all right, let's get back into that thing. So, yeah, I've been hit it ever since then. So, okay, 3 years in.
The accident kind of put your life into perspective a little bit.
That I had the coolest experience for a tragic experience. You know what I mean? I can laugh about it now. And I laughed about it the day it happened because I got hit by this chick who was like 16 years old. Pulled out of her garage, just hit me, T-boned me.
Oh, wow.
And I had the whole, like, life flash before your eyes type scenario. It's yeah. pretty amazing. Like, I launched through time and space. Time slowed down. I had thought about every situation I had that day and just stuff that, like man, I should have taken high school more serious. You know, I should have, like, yeah, you know, I should have said goodbye to my mom. You know, like, all those kind of things that I should have done. Like, I had to pay my Capital One bill. Just weird things that were, and, like, you know, and then I got hit. And like, in Wisconsin, they don't have a motorcycle. They don't have a helmet law. So you can ride without a helmet, which is typically what I do. So when I got out here wearing a helmet on my motorcycle, I'm like, I'm indestructible. I'm like I thought I was like Iron Man. Like, nothing can faze me on this motorcycle. I'm going through, like, Tron and traffic and stuff. And then I got hit. And the second I got launched out of the bike, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so vulnerable right now. And I was like, I was like 28 at the time. I'm like, 28 years old. I'm going to die as, like, a waiter. That's it. That's what's happening. I'm like, I should probably do some more stuff. I got to really hit the grind. So it kind of gave me more, just really start hitting the pavement more. I feel like with stand-up, you can really do more work. You know what I mean? It's really easy to be busy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you're just out there in the grind, you can't help but succeed.
Yeah.
If you're funny.
That's true. Yeah, because if you're not funny, you will have a short-lived career.
Yeah. You know that. You should know that. I mean, I feel like it's in it as long as I have been, or you have been, like, you know, you're a funny guy. That's why you're doing this right now. You're in a stand-up sit-down right now. Black Hollywood Live.
Slightly funny. Enough people think that I'm funny. You know, I've fooled them
long enough.
I know
you're funny. I thought that myself, too. But when you have people run into you and you're like, hey, I saw you at the Comedy Store. You're funny. I'm like, yeah, those are the best compliments. Your friends will always tell you what they think you want you to hear. You know what I mean? At least I feel that. I also feel the same way about other comics. Like, I feel like some people are just trying to use an angle.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm. I just, not to sound paranoid or anything, but I'm like, the genuine... Someone that's seen you perform live, that compliment's always the best one.
But let me ask you this, because, like, you know, because I don't like to have beef with people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, even if someone sucks, like, if I'm at a show and, you know, I'm like, say I'm on so and so's show and there's maybe like 10 of us, and out of the 10, four or five of them aren't funny at all, and then like the rest of us are, you know, like we're varying degrees of funny. I'm still gonna say, hey man, good set. Maybe you can tweak this a little bit, you know, just kind of help you out. But I'm not going to be like, yo, like, you're terrible.
Well, that's the thing. You can gauge, like, as far as where someone's at, what they're, like, going for with a joke. Then when they're doing something new, you can give them, like, a tag, you know, that kind of pointer stuff. But just to blatantly lie to someone, like, you're awesome. You know, they book you on a show, but hilarious. I can't do that. I'd rather just not say anything, like, hey, thanks for the spot. And then just kind of, like, you know what I mean? Like, because it's not going to help them out. But and I'm just lying at that point. Like, maybe I do have more of a moral compass than I thought, but, like, my word means something. I'm not going to just tell everyone they're awesome all the time. That's just a jerk thing to do.
Now this guy believes. Yeah, Tony said it.
Yeah.
So I could sell out Madison Square Garden.
Could you imagine that 10 years down the road? Someone's been wasting. They're just getting just bombing all the time, and, like, it comes back to, like, I was the one that told them that they had what it takes. You know what I mean? That's gotta be a scenario somewhere.
Right. Like, you were
someone
the one.
Put you, exactly. Who told you? Tony Klein did. Like, nah, I don't want that on me.
So what was your first show like?
My first show was good. My first show was at the Comedy Store, the main room. It was the sad thing is a lot of stuff I have is, like, observational. Mm. And basically, I should have done stand-up a lot longer, like, way sooner than I did. I just always had, like, a knack for seeing things differently. I have a skewed perception on life. And then that just, you know, when it relates to people, it's like, I think that way, too. I'm also retarded. That is, like, the blessing in disguise. So just, I guess, the fact that, like, somehow my wires got crossed and I just kind of see things differently, it hasn't been that difficult to try to transcend that on stage.
Mm.
Just the fact of, like, getting that first chance was kind of a pain in the ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the first show was good. I've had bad shows, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's, like, nothing worse than bomb. I did, like, doing black material as a white guy about my girlfriend. If it's not done the right way, can come across the entire worst possible way.
Yeah.
And that is just, that's a nightmare in its own right. You know what I mean? Because you can't, like, the worst thing you could be as a white guy is labeled racist.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I can't be racist. My girlfriend's black. That's not, like, there's, it's not, you know what I mean? I'm like, so when there's material that comes across, because, like, my girlfriend has, like, she just got a new weave.
Mm.
Not a big fan of it. I like her natural hair and stuff. Yeah. And I sometimes think that her weave has ownership of her. She's kind of like possessed by it. You know what I mean? Like, gives her like a sassy attitude. You know what I mean? Like, stuff that she wouldn't typically do, she does now because she's got like, I feel like she's like a disguise, basically. Sounds bad.
Yeah, she feels like superhero now. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. And I'm like, you know, it's like your weed's giving you an attitude.
You know what's funny though, like, because like there's when white folks say, "Oh, I can't be racist. I have a black friend," or "I have a black," like that sounds racist.
I know, right? I know exactly. But that's like case in point. Like, there's nothing that there's no way that you can kind of say that without sounding racist. You're like, oh, I'm not racist. That sounds racist.
Yeah, like, it's like, because that, and then especially after,
I just like talking to people. It doesn't really matter who they are.
Yeah.
And I'm also like I realize that like it's kind of a bad thing. Mm. I'm talking to, like, I was shooting this with this homeless guy the other day. And then I realized that he and I were connecting on too many levels. I'm like, damn, I'm like a sneeze away from being crazy, apparently, because he and I are making everything he says is just making sense. I'm like, yeah, I think the government's out to get me too. I don't trust Apple either. Then I'm like, wow, this guy eats out of a garbage can. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a home away from being that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you are one crazy decision away from being the next door neighbor to that guy.
Like, if I ever feel constrained by my house and I start deciding living on the street, that's when I become full blown crazy.
Yeah,
like, I feel like that guy's like claustrophobic. He feels restricted in an apartment, so his best place, he just lives in the whole city of LA. You know, why call one place home? That's his mindset.
You know, roaches are his friends now.
I think I just talked myself into moving out of my apartment right there. Like, that does sound appealing.
That's where we're saying you could have beachfront property too. Exactly. You know what I mean?
So see? Live anywhere I want. That's how it goes.
Exactly. Don't have to worry about eviction or anything.
Yeah.
So what was your best show? Because you talked about, you know, you had a bad show. So what was, like, the best show that you say you've had?
God, that's a tough one. Now, I almost have to, like, do the girlfriend thing and ask you, what was your best show? Do that. Throw that back in your face.
Well, no, I mean, well, like there's,
because
I haven't had a best show yet. Yeah. There's been a lot of like good shows, you know, because I'm saving my best show title for like The Garden. Then that'll be like, okay,
so
like,
best show, be at, show as of yet, or best show so far for you. What would that be?
I mean, I haven't gotten a standing ovation yet, but okay, I will say, probably the one that I that was filmed that we put up at the Cork Lounge was Wednesday night. It was a good show, you know, had some new stuff in there, worked out, you know, and you know, got applause, got you know, a couple of applause breaks, kind of forced one, but you know,
I will wait here until you make an applause break.
Yeah, because I was like, come on, that was clever, guy, that was clever, you know. So yeah, but that was good, you know, because you, like, when you're in the zone and when you're in the groove, then it's like, you know.
Those are the best. I think I've had quite a few. I do a lot of shows at the Belly Room at the Comedy Store, like shows that I'll co-produce. And when you get a good room like that and it has a good energy and people just, like, they're laughing at everything. It doesn't matter what it is. There's, like, a sound that any in the room, people just start laughing. And, like, you just get that contagious laughing and stuff, like, especially when you have a new set.
Yeah.
You know, you just polished up. And they're just hitting every punch that you have, every tag just hits. That's the best show. So I don't think I have a greatest show, but I think those are my favorite shows. That's when I'm like, yeah, this is like what it's because it's a drug. That's all stand-up is.
It is. It really is.
Like, I'm just addicted to a microphone. That's it. Absolutely. Get that. And the thing, too, is that gratification's not always there. If you fall flat or you have a killer show, a set in one, if you ever do like 2-3 shows in a night and you have like a killer show, mid-show, and like another good show, it's just, I still will think about the show that I did the worst on.
Yeah.
Before I go to bed, I'm like, you dropped the ball there. You know,
Why didn't I?
Yeah, I'm like, like, I could go back. It's like, it's a weird thing. I'm never happy enough.
Okay, but now let me ask this, though. After the first time you did stand-up, were you like, oh my God, I have to do this more?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Exactly. I think you're the same way. I think every comic is the same way.
Yeah.
Even, like, I think the first time I had a bad set, I was like, no, just that's the, I think I probably went the first couple weeks without really having like a, I mean, not, I'm, but I, by saying like not a bad set, like wasn't just stopped, everyone was just holding their stomach, laughing, rolling in the aisles and stuff, but like it was kind of flat, and then like there was an actual, it was just a silence, like that was a bad set. I'm like, whoa, none of those little tricks that I have worked. I'm like, what's going on here? Then I'm like, some people, I feel like, and that's when you can tell whether or not you want to pursue this, or like, I gotta get out, I don't ever want to feel like that again, where I'm like, nah, F that. I'm going back in there. I'm going to get those people to laugh. I wish I could get those people back. Do you ever have that feeling?
Yeah.
Like, I had like a, one of the first shows I did at this new room, I'm running the Man Cave, which I'd like to get you back.
Great room, by the way, guys.
we'll get Nick Perdue back down there. I had a bad set. I'm like, it was packed out, which is the worst scenario ever. It's like, that's like the first impression type thing. I'm like, I had to go back there week after week and try to prove myself to the staff. I was one of the staff. They're always there. People like in the seats always rotate, but like the people that like the nine people that are running the establishment, I don't want to look like, ah, this idiot's on stage again. I'm just like walking outside having a cigarette break. I'm like, no, just, come on, give me a chance. Give me a chance. You know, that's the worst.
Okay. But now, how do you recover within a set when it's bombing? Like, you know, like, all right, none of this is working. How can I get these laughs back? Like, what do you do to at least, like, end on a decent note?
It depends. If you're in, like, a bar scenario, like a bar show, and people are just talking in the background, I feel like the best thing to do is just kind of, like, see what they're talking about. Just address what commotion's going on. Because apparently they're more concerned with what they're talking about than you, so that type of situation. But material that I have that drops... That's a tough one. I don't like to just change subjects because, like, you know what I mean? You got to try to make some kind of decent segue.
Yeah.
Whatever I'm, like, on, I can try to find some kind of sister topic and then switch to that. And, like, that might seem like plays better. But it's a nightmare. There's no real, there's no, like, set thing to do. It's kind of like, I don't want to drown, but I'm going to keep treading water somehow. Like, I don't want a life raft. I don't want to get off the stage and just give up my time. I'll figure this out, but I'm not going to drown. That's the whole plan.
Yeah, because I feel
like... As dumb as an analogy as that is.
Well, because, like, the worst thing that you can do, and because, like, I've done this, it's where you just, like, bail on a joke, and you try something else, and then that is where you keep bailing on jokes.
Yeah. I don't want to say this dude's name. I had an actor who wanted to give himself a run at doing stand-up, and kind of just guest bumped himself on a show of mine, which I wasn't too happy about. It's on a show called Scandal. I don't have many enemies. That guy is like, now he just made himself an enemy because it was like my show. He wouldn't get off the stage. He was bombing, started heckling. He started heckling the audience, which is ruining the room. You've had that before. You've been in a room before when someone just starts, their stuff sucks. They get insecure.
Right.
And they start trying to make the cut, like the actual, like the audience uncomfortable because they're uncomfortable, but then it makes everyone uncomfortable. And then I'm getting pissed off. I'm like trying to get this guy off the stage. And he starts getting, I'm like, I would never want to do that. So when you see people do that, you're like, okay, note to self. Not that I would ever do that, but I'm like, that's a terrible... So dude, that's a perfect example of what to not ever do on stage when you're bombing. The best case scenario, that guy would have got off stage. It wasn't until his wife got him off 5 minutes later when he's drunk that I finally got him off stage. But the funny thing is when someone does that, I would really like to say the guy's name, but I can't.
I mean, you what are his initials?
His initials are Columbus Short. Those are his initials. Dude, I couldn't get the guy off the stage forever, and it sucked because it was like, I know. I honestly, it was the best, it was probably my best, like, debunking of a heckler, but it wasn't even a heckler, it was a guy that was on the show. Because, like, after he got off the stage, like, I was trying to light him to get off the stage, and he starts, like, talking crap to me. I'm like, you do know I brought you on the stage. I'm the host. I'm going to get back up there in a second, take the mic back from you. Do you not think I'm going to say anything to you? I'm not going to just brush it off and, like, nothing happened. Like,
we all have
to address the elephant in the room. Exactly. And, like, for my own credibility, I'm, like, not going to let my, I had to bump two comic. I wasn't happy about the whole situation.
Yeah. And that's the worst thing.
That is the worst thing.
One, being bumped, and then being bumped by someone, I mean, regardless who this person is, I understand that we all have bad nights. I understand that. But, you know, because, like, if I'm being bumped by, let's say, like, Kevin, let's say Kevin Hart comes in, you know, and I'm bumped by him, cool, because 9 out of 10, he's going to, you know, kill, or he's going to be funny.
Yeah.
But if you have an off night, it's like, all right, because I know that you're funny, and it's still okay, because there's that mutual respect comedian to comedian.
Yeah.
But if it's someone else who's, you know, let me just try this thing out.
Exactly.
Know, I don't care who you are.
He got up on the stage, and the first thing he said, his opener was this: I'm a great actor. I've never done stand-up before, but I feel like I can do a pretty good job. That's how I open. I'm like, wow, you just insulted everyone that's on this show. It's like, I don't do what you do, but I do something else. So I feel like my least attempt, I can still do just as good as you.
Right.
Here I go. And it just bombed from there on out. I'm like, it was a nightmare. It was pretty awesome. I had probably the best retaliation set ever.
Now.
I wish no one taped it. No one said it. There's no YouTube
or
nothing.
He was on stage and see, that would have been a great TMZ
I know, I know.
You know?
Believe me. I mean, I got a good... It was pretty awesome because the security had to get him out because we were going back and forth after I got back on stage. And it was
So you were on stage and he was off stage and he was still talking?
Yeah, when I got back on stage, after I got him off, after his wife got him off, I got on stage. And then I had to apologize to my comics and the rest of the audience there. I'm like, sorry, you guys had to waste 10 minutes of your life listening to this arrogant prick talk about himself. Like, just prefaced it by that. And then just kind of went through his set and kind of picked apart him via all the stuff that he gave me.
That he said, right.
It was like a battle. You guys should have seen it. it was just like, and I used to do a debate in high school. It was an easy A, you know?
Yeah.
In debate, if you take the counterpoint, all you have to do is listen to the person doing the first part and just absorb that,
right,
and then just make a bullshit case and retaliate. Sorry.
But I mean, you know, and that's the thing too, because there's a lot of folks that feel that they can do stand up, you know, or feel that they are funny, but it's like, once you get on the stage, cause that's half the battle is getting up.
Yeah.
You know, getting up there is half the battle. All right. Now, two, and if you happen to be a well-known person, people will give you a pass for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
exactly.
So he probably got that pass, and then, all right, you need to say something funny, you know?
Exactly. Like, my girlfriend is a huge fan of the show, and when he got on stage, she's like, oh my God, I'm so happy he's here. I'm like, and then like minutes later, she's like, oh. I was like, yeah, I was not happy with that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But okay, but how do you handle hecklers?
I don't really have too many scenarios where I have hecklers because I don't like to do the rhetorical questions. That's, you know, the questions that should be rhetorical, but like a typical audience member that may be a first time person going to a comedy club. So I feel like that's another thing too. I think there's like a learning curve for like when people go, I swear, there's like some people you can tell it's their first time being there. And it's like, I don't know what they know. It blows my mind. It blows my mind because there's never another scenario when you're in a dark lit room with a stage when you talk back to the people on stage. You don't do that when you're at a play.
Yeah, it's true.
They're like, Romeo, oh, Romeo, where are they, Romeo? Like, right here. Row 12, seat B, right here. That's where Romeo is. No one does that. But, like, it was stand-up. Anytime I said someone's like, you guys are just, I do that all the time. Like, they're just the heckling there that's there. It blows my mind. But, I try not to get in a situation where I would involve too much heckling. And I only try, I mean, you got to do crowd work just to, you know, keep the crowd familiar. But I think one time I had a chick that came to like two shows back to back, and I used the same joke. It was a dumb like. Sometimes I think about like orange juice. I think it has like the coolest nickname, OJ, and I kind of feel like other juices got left out of the mix. Like, why is like cranberry juice not CJ and AJ for apple juice? Like, why is OJ got the cool nickname?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I have dumb thoughts like that, tangential thoughts and stuff, and it was a part of a bigger bit. And some chick's like, I heard that joke yesterday. I was like, what? Orange juice jokes don't just come into my head, right? You try writing juice jokes, right, and come back the next day with something fresh. A lot of puns there.
Like, and it was told by a guy who looked just like you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know.
I heard that yesterday. I'm like, yeah, well, cause it was me telling the joke yesterday. It's like
that's funny.
But, you know, then, like, another comic was like, I was a little pissed about it. And he's like, yeah, but you should remember your material. I'm like, yeah, touche, but.
Yeah, because like that's always nice when you know someone comes up to you and was like, "Hey, I like the joke you do about da 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 da." You know what I mean? And then you're like, "Wow, like that's good because your stuff is memorable."
Yeah,
you know.
As long as they preface it by saying, "I like the joke," rather than be like, "You're the guy that has that joke," and then you're kind of like, "What do you like that joke?" I mean, you remembered it, but was that a good thing or a bad thing?
Did you steal it and tweet it?
Like, was that like a joke you said I was the worst joke you ever heard, and like I'm the guy that gave you that joke? I guess.
Thank you. Thank
you got to have a little bit of, like, you know, you don't want to think, be big-headed. I think sometimes people think everything. You ever, like, have a friend that's like, dude, that chick's totally checking you out right now. When someone's looking, when girl's looking at me, I'm like, man, maybe I have a bug hanging or something. I get insecure more than being like, of course she's looking at me. Why wouldn't she be? Like, there's two parts. I feel like the same thing with stand-up and feedback from, like, audience members. Like, I want to make sure they're, like, telling me what I'm getting with the feedback they're giving me.
Yeah.
And not, like, taking it the wrong way. Be like, I knew that joke would kill it always does, you know.
Now, how do you write new material? Like, do you, like, physically write everything down? Do you put it into a recorder?
Well, the majority of my stuff is, like, storytelling stuff. So, like, I try to, like, go on stage at least, you know, at least once a night. Try to get up somewhere. If I don't have a book show, I just try to do a mic just so whatever I have. Basically, I try to do, like, an audio diary. So I take whatever I have, like, clearing through the day, what came around, and then just try to get that on stage. Just to make sure, see if it plays, if it doesn't, you know, whatever. But at least I got it, and I always go back to it again. I also have an outstanding memory. Nobody, not bragging.
So,
I have an elephant memory, basically.
How long from, you know, like, inception to, you know, like, when it's all the way done, does it take for you to complete a joke? Like, to when it, like, let's say it's like, it'll be like TV ready.
When I have something I think plays well, I will just work on it and try to slip it in a set. Probably like 6 months, I'd say. Mm-hmm. 6 months. And that's only maybe giving might yield you. It's like a weird baking recipe. You take 6 months of preparing a joke and trying to work it out, but you can't use it too long because then you're the guy that has the same set all the time. So you got to like put that on the back burner, but you want to put it on the back burner until you get it decently made. Yeah. You know what I mean? So about 6 months, I'll try to like redo all my set and then keep what I have in the back and try to like – it's like sorting your laundry basically is what I do. Mm. As dumb as that sounds, like I put like material in different bins in my head, and then if I have something that's like a new joke that might work with that, I'll try to put those two together.
Yeah.
You know, put likes together.
So do you ever throw jokes away?
I try. I mean, it depends. I really don't, because I have just notebooks upon notebooks and stuff that like – it's just a bunch of little
like bullet points.
Points, one line of a joke or maybe a tag, or just kind of try to flush out some stuff. But I mean, on the way over here, I was just road raging the whole way. And like I had like a week last week, my girlfriend wanted to meet up down on the west side and get lunch. And I live in West Hollywood. So going on to like the west side down by like 405, that takes like forever. That's why it took me forever to get here. Just fighting traffic. It was a Friday too. And I'm just fighting traffic the whole way over there. She has a small window. I get there. We only have 15 minutes left. I almost lost it the whole way. I'm yelling. This is when they're setting up the LA Marathon like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like yelling. Like I have no more internal monologue. It's just going away from road rage. I just yell when I'm driving. I get 8 miles to the gallon. I'm spending 50 cents per mile. I've probably spent $10 to get down to lunch by her. I'm losing it at construction work. I'm like, set up for this tomorrow. This thing's not even until Sunday. It's Friday. Just yelling the whole way I get down there. Then, of course, as girls are, they're always amazing when they see you when you're late. And they're like, you know, we only have 15 minutes now because you got here late. I'm like, I just like, do you know what I just fought? I just probably broke like 100 traffic laws.
Yeah.
Could have like killed numerous people, yelled at a lot of people, spent $10 in gas, got here, paid for this crappy sushi meal, which I don't want to eat, but you do because that's what I got to do because I'm a guy. I pay for things. And now you just told me I only have 15 minutes left. But the best thing was is she told me, because I got to leave and go to West Hollywood after this. I'm like, you're going to the place I just came from in 15 minutes. Why don't we just get lunch on my side of town? But you can't say it to your girlfriend. I just sat there like just quiet. I'm like, But that eventually will be some kind of material. So I'm like, God, that's just – it'll be a bigger part of like an umbrella topic of my girlfriend. But like just things like that. Like I love the girl and like she's great. She's great. But just women don't – I can't generalize that and say women. Sometimes. Sometimes just girls just understand, yeah.
Okay, so things you're – your girlfriend is black.
Yes.
She is of the African persuasion.
Uh-huh.
And so black rooms versus white rooms. Is there any difference? Because some comedians say there's not really a difference. But do you feel that there is a difference doing, you know, like black rooms, white rooms, Latin rooms, you know, stuff like
I
that?
I think black rooms are typically more, they're more, they'll tell you whether or not they like what you're doing.
Yeah.
But that's just, I mean, and I just think that's just like, I actually enjoy that. Because it's like, all right, we're not like this, move on. Whereas like, I don't know what you, because it's not like there's any white rooms. It's like, I guess a predominantly white room would just be silent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, whereas like a black room or a Latina room. Take it.
Yeah, I like there's a couple of Latina rooms I've done in like East LA and stuff. And like, say, I think it's the same thing as like a black room. They're just more prone to tell you, like, you know, they don't like the material. Like, they'll just be like, move on. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have that kind of thing, but I've heard people like, next topic, who's the next guy? And I'm like, damn, that sucks. I'm like, you gotta make sure you're hitting all the time. Like, which is good. I think that's probably the best, like, you know, work you can do. That's what you want to do. You know what I mean? I'd rather have that kind of, like, you know, it's a high stakes game.
Yeah. And because it's like, and that really kind of weeds out the bad ones versus
saying that, like, it's like doing a general audience room's different. It's just the fact that there's a weird silence there where you're like, okay, are you guys just tired? Are you burnt out? Am I going up too late? Do you not like the material? There's just too much. Yeah. Whereas, like, ethnic rooms tend to just throw it out there. I'm like, done, awesome. You don't want to just go home. You want me to talk about something different. That's like, you know, right. I appreciate that feedback. Some people get tough. I'm like, how dare, this is my time up here. Like, you know, that's never going to work. I don't get that kind of mentality. But,
okay, because you produce shows. You have two or three shows that you produce, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, in LA is a showcase town. This is what I've been told. Yeah. They say LA is a showcase town. And one, you know, it's difficult for comedians to make some money. So this is like a two-part question. One, what is your feeling about making money in stand-up in LA?
Yeah.
And then what is your feeling about bringer shows in LA?
I don't like bringer shows. I try not to ever do bringer shows. I always tell my comics I appreciate them telling their friends, But I won't tell someone, like, they can't go on if they don't have, like, 10 people. I think that's a trashy thing to do. Mm. You know what I mean? I'm not booking your 10 friends. I'm booking you.
Yeah.
If you want to bring friends, I appreciate that. I try to take the workload on myself. It's never a good thing because it stresses you out.
It does.
But I just, it's what I want to do. You know what I mean? I hate using people. Everyone's had done a bringer show at one point in time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't have enough people. And I got my time cut. I'm like, yeah, I'm never doing this. Anytime I heard the word bringer, I'm like, I don't want anything to do with that. That's stupid. It's just it's a jerk thing to do. A lot of guys do it, though. What was the other part of the question?
And then about making money.
Oh, yeah, money. That's the thing. You can make money producing shows. I don't want to do that because it's not. I don't want to be a producer. Mm. In fact, I would like to try to keep that for the art only and then make money on the road. You can make money in San Diego or San Francisco and stuff or in California. But yeah, L.A. is definitely a... You're doing stand-up for free, and it's crazy seeing guys that are like, you know, I've had them on my shows, like guys that are like, you know, paid Comedy Central acts and stuff, or got shows on MTV, do your show, and they do it for free, and I'm like, I don't think I deserve money to do an LA show, because these guys aren't getting money for LA shows. You got to get out of LA to make money. The problem is getting out of LA to make money. You know what I mean? It's a catch-22, because...
Right.
Yeah, but...
Okay.
This year, man, we'll hit some Midwest tours, huh?
There you go. Just all, because, you know, like, that's what I've heard. People have been talking that, you know, like, Kentucky, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Iowa, stuff like this. But it's just like the college is out there because there's not a lot to do. You know what I mean? So you come in, and if you're funny, then they'll be like, oh, my gosh, they'll just love you.
I'm going to make the hometown boy makes good tour, you know?
Yeah. You know? Because you're selling out in Wisconsin.
Waukesha, Wisconsin, man. Yeah. Come on hot. I'm going to probably go back there and do some stuff in the Midwest. I got, like, a family back there, so I good base of operation. But I only want to go back for, like, a week.
Yeah, you can't stay too long. And, like, during, like, the summer months, you don't want to go there.
I'd say late spring. Summer is, like, mosquito-ridden and humid. Oh, and it's so just that the place sucks. It's the worst.
It's terrible. So who do you really look up to, you know, in stand-up? You know, like who was your...
My favorite comics right now are like, Brian Regan's going to be a constant. He's like the messiah, if you will, as far as comics go. I think he's probably one of the best comics ever.
And he's clean, too. He stays clean.
I wish I could not swear, but I enjoy swearing. So that's where Bill Burr comes in, because I feel like he's also amazing, and he's also really witty, and he's got some, you know, deep stuff. And he's like some of his stuff is like, it's touching. Same way with Brian Regan or Jim Gaffigan, because they all have, like, family. You know what I mean? There's a certain element of that. I appreciate a singular bachelor comic like myself, but to a degree, there's, like, a certain element of, like, you want to... There's relatability that you want to have that is there, and I think those guys do a pretty good job at doing it, especially the clean guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because initially, when I started doing stand-up, I didn't want to swear, but my mom swears. You know, you want to do stuff that you're comfortable doing in front of your parents.
Yeah.
I don't get too blue. I don't like to go vulgar. I don't like to use the C words very much because I don't use them in my comment talk.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, every day, yeah.
Exactly. I don't want to have, like, a split personality. I talk about some blue stuff on stage. Like, I sound like a douche, you know?
Yeah, like, who is this guy?
Yeah, he changed. Yeah. Well, I have, like, some stepsisters and stuff, and I have, like, you know, YouTube videos and whatnot, and they're watching it, and I haven't talked to them. They're, like, estranged. I haven't talked to them in 10 years. Like, wow, you really swear a lot now. I'm like, I've sworn for a long time. It's not like, stand-up's changed you. You swear all the time. I'm like, well, no, sometimes you just gotta, you can't. You need, like, a verbal punctuation. Yeah. Sometimes a good F word works perfect. You know,
that's true.
Those are the exclamation points I wanted, but, like, a vocal version.
So. Yeah, but no, okay, but no, have you ever challenged yourself just to do a straight clean set?
Yeah, I did, like, a clean set, like, last week in Venice. There's, like, a place, Danny's in Venice. It's, like, a restaurant, so you have to do clean, which is fine, because I have a lot of clean, because I have a lot of cerebral stuff, a lot of, like, dumb, like, that toast joke you like.
Yeah.
it's a dumb joke, and it's clean. It's just, like, it's a thinker. It's a slow burner.
Right. Know? Like the toast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the problem is, though, I feel like sometimes in a restaurant environment, when you're like, you ever do a show when you feel like people didn't know there was a show there, and they're eating their dinner, and like, I've seen engagements. There was, like, I was downtown doing a downtown show last Thursday, and there was a couple there for their anniversary, and I know they didn't know there was going to be a show there, but that was what they're planning to do, and like, I know the guy spent the whole week planning up for this thing. It's like their 10-year anniversary, and they went down to this restaurant, and then I happened to be there with a bunch of other comics and a microphone. I'm like, oh, we ruined this for you. And they were good sports, but I was like, sometimes people don't want to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know? they want to have, like, a nice, intimate moment, you know, with their significant other.
Mm-hmm.
Not some guy, you know, standing on a bar stool with a microphone.
But now, see, I've done clean sets in situations like that, and they just, like, under the radar. Like, didn't even, like, I was talking to no one, like, doing a monologue. And then the dirty guys in a situation like that can grab them. You know what I mean? But it completely ruins what they're doing and stuff like that. So I'm like, I don't know. Do I want to ruin their meal and get like a good set out of this thing, or like just kind of, you know, do my thing?
it's kind of fly.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
So what do you think the state of comedy is right now? You know, because like there's only maybe, you know, like a few like top, you know, breakout stars, and there's a lot of guys who are like on the bubble. You know what I mean? But they're not really like big time.
Yeah, there's like I think because your Dane Cooks and like your, you know, George Carlin's, the big guys, the big fish, Kevin Hart and all those guys, those are rare. I mean, that's like, you look at Hollywood and like who gets Oscars as far as actors go. Mm. There's 200 people that like are in the running and stuff each year, but there's like thousands of actors in SAG.
Yeah.
Stand-up's the same way. There's like a shit ton of comics. And there's like, five guys in the upper echelon?
Right.
But below that, though, is what I really like ideally to do. Like, I think that'd be great to be someone like a... Nah, I don't think I want to be as big. Dane Cook's too popular.
But, I mean, okay, but
you can almost be flash in the pan, though, at some point in time. But if you blow up too big, people love to hate you. And I don't want to have people running into me all the time. I like to just kind of make my rent money off doing stand-up and then just do my thing. I enjoy it enough for what it is. I don't need to, like, have all the lavish stuff. Sounds like a mediocre, like, expectation, but at the same time, it's like... It's practical, and you can always grow bigger. You
know,
get myself off a day job, and I'm good to go.
Right, right.
I don't want to sell pancakes anymore.
As long as it's paying the bills,
that's the thing. Is like, I feel, and you can always move up from there. Yeah. Hard work and perseverance will always get you to where you want to go.
But okay, but now let me ask you, just because like the Dane Cook situation, right? Yeah. You know, like maybe 3-5 years ago, he was probably the biggest thing selling at Madison Square Garden, this and that, yada yada yada. Now, though, I don't think he can sell out Madison Square Garden. Like, he can definitely fill, I would say, a 8 to 10,000 seater. He could fill that. But going, like, 20, I don't think he can do 20.
I don't know. I mean...
You know, because it kind of feels like he fell off a little bit. Not saying that he's not funny anymore, but he's not where he was.
Well, that's the thing. I think people got sick of him. He was on everything. He was everywhere. He was doing a lot of movie roles and stuff, which is fine. But I think that basically, people just got burnt down on Dane Cook being in everything. Mm. Everyone's like, oh, he's the funniest guy. And then people, like, you know, in colleges, like, playing his tapes all the time and stuff. Yeah. Like, he just kind of got people, his own success.
Was kind of his downfall.
Bit him, which is kind of like it's unfortunate because he's a really nice guy and he's a funny guy. And,
yeah.
And you've met him. I've met him. We've both met him and stuff. But you've also seen him when he has a dark set. And you're like, because that gets to people, man. That's a huge thing. Could you imagine being like the biggest thing since sliced bread, and all of a sudden, like, the next week, like, Nick Perdue, he sucks. That guy's overrated. Like, that would kill you. Yeah. Like, the day before, where everyone's like, that guy, everything that guy says is amazing. Then at some point in time, there's one day when people are like, I don't like him anymore.
Yeah, just like, don't like, that's enough.
In fact, I hate him. And people are just blogging on him and blasting him. Right. And he gets a lot of crap. He gets a lot of crap on his, like, Twitter. People talk crap all the time. He's a nice guy. Yeah. Like, he's never done anything. He's not a mean person.
Yeah.
It's just a sad thing.
But, okay, I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think that Kevin Hart is headed down that same road? You know, because he's done the big arenas, you know, did an international tour.
I think Kevin Hart, if he
four
does...
Four movies right now.
He'll go in an Eddie Murphy way, if he does anything like that. He's a great guy. And like, do you ever see that Conan skit with him?
Oh, yeah, well, with him, him and Ice Cube, and they're running around. Yeah.
Ice Cube's hilarious, too, by the way. I gotta say. His comedic time is always awesome. But Kevin Hart, I feel like he do the same thing as, like, Eddie Murphy. He'll go down that road and, like,
he'll probably just stop doing some comedy. Family. You know, as long as he doesn't go the Channing route with Eddie Murphy, then, you know, like, let him, you know, because...
Well, I just don't... I think he's too versatile to, like, be, like, a flash in the pan. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's got too many things that he'll be current and he'll still do stand-up, and he's just a good dude all around. The talented guy.
No, I mean, hopefully, you know, he's able to, you know, stay on for a while. Because, like, that's the thing, you know, because, like, you know, you saw what happened with, like, the Cat Williams and then Dave Chappelle, and then so it's like he's, like, the next guy up, you know.
But,
and
see,
then,
now, okay, I think Chappelle, though, I think he has, like, a similar mindset of what I was saying. It's like, you don't want to be too big because then you're like, He kind of shot himself in the foot. Obviously, he did. I mean, he fucking went away from a contract with Comedy Central. But it's because of the fact that, like, he was growing to be, like, a Dane Cook type thing. It was like he'd try to get out of that.
Mm.
But, I mean, if you're in that fast track, I don't really know what to do. I mean, What would you do? Would you try to just ride it out and see how high you can go, or just
curve it a little bit? My biggest thing, and I've told people this, is that I want to do stadiums. Like, yeah. I want to sell like 80,000, 100,000, like, and do like a big stadium, yeah. Do stadium tours. You know what I mean? Like, and then because like, there's all right. Once you do that, then I'm like, all right, then like I'm yeah. cool. Like, what else do you really need to do? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I agree. See, I think I don't want to do that too early though. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
I would like to, the same reason why I don't go to the gym and put like 8 plates on each side and try to bench it, because I'm not that strong. You know what I mean? I got to build up to that kind of stuff. I would like to do that. I mean, I think everyone would like to have that giant crowd just to hear that uproarious laughter. You know what I mean? I can only imagine how awesome that'd be. However, I'm fine doing comedy in front of 5 people at a bar.
Right. Like, I'm on a
just
on
totally
a
happy,
Tuesday
totally
night.
Content with that. No, because when you know when you do like an improv show or like the Laugh Factory, like the bigger venues that are solely based for comedy, like an actual good comedy club show, those are the best because people are there. They're actually listening. If you're Dane Cook or like Chappelle, anyone selling out a stadium, people are there to see you.
Yeah.
You're typically going to, they're on your side already. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just to get the people in the seats, though, is the thing.
Yeah.
I still think Dane Cook could do that, but he pulls all his pals in and stuff. He's got like a pretty good lineup of guys all the time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, no, I mean, it is that because I actually just watched Vicious Circle the other day, and so I'm like this guy, you know, he's hilarious, and okay. So
how weird do you think that'd be doing a set like that on a circular stage?
I actually thought about that, and I'm like. It was perfect for him because he doesn't stop moving. Like, he just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he just walks and he's going, you know, so like, it's perfect for him. It would be a little weird for me knowing that there's people behind you.
Exactly.
Cause I feel and then like you don't, because mm-hmm. like, you're like cheating them because they're not getting the full, you know what I mean?
Because it's typically like an insult to turn your back on an audience on stage. And so like Johnny Cash got a lot of crap for that when he started his career.
Yeah.
But like Dane Cook with that, I was watching that the other day too. Then I also watched the movie The Town the other day, and there's that part at the end of Jeremy Renner when he's running away with the gun and he's like shooting everywhere because there's cops all around him.
I feel that's
how Dane Cook is on stage. He's like just shooting jokes around all around the room, and he's like staying around. I'm like, it'd almost be like it would take you out of what you're doing trying to do a 360 stage like that.
Yeah.
At least me. I don't know.
I mean, either way, it'll be a great challenge.
It'd be a great experience nonetheless.
Yeah.
I just know. Blows my mind. Yeah.
So before we wrap, a couple things. Internet comedians versus traditional stand-up. What's your take on that?
I always go traditional stand-up. I think it's like the best way to do it. I think word of mouth, just the buzz is the way to do it. I don't want to because I feel like if you promote yourself, I think the internet's great for promoting yourself, but I feel a lot of people live second lives via the internet that aren't really necessarily true.
Right.
It's easy to put your best clips online or make like funny skits and really promote yourself as a comic. But you're literally it's the same thing about a girl that wears too much makeup.
Yeah,
you're putting on the wrong like putting up the wrong foot.
It's a facade.
Facade, yeah, exactly. Right? I don't like that kind of plastic crap. Even though we live in Hollywood, whatever.
The land of plastic
exactly.
And fake, right?
Sick of fake.
So where can people see you live next?
Tonight at the Comedy Store, 7:00. I'll be there. Then Sunday and Monday, I'm on the West Side. I'm at Cock and Bull on Sunday, Brennan's on Monday. If you want to pop by, do a spot, let me know. That's for Nick Perdue and anyone else.
But come by and
come
and
by and laugh.
Enjoy
yeah,
it.
Nick
yeah,
will
come
be
by
there.
Laugh, and then, have a good time.
Yeah, I'm like at the Wednesday. I'm at the Man Cave. Tuesday, me and my girl are gonna go bowling with her parents. Her dad thinks I'm Asian, so I think her dad gave me the blessing. He's like Belizean too.
There you go. There you go. And so where can people find you online?
Online, I'm at Facebook / Tony Klein comedian and my Twitter and all stuff. You can find it. Just look, Google Tony Klein. That's all you do.
There you go.
See my ugly mug.
There you go. Thank you, Tony, for
coming
in.
Thanks, man,
it was fun.
Me.
We had a great time.
Yeah, we did.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Again, you know me, Nick Perdue. You can find me all over the internet at the Nick Perdue. Until next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire BHL crew, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I'm your BHL announcer, Scipio. Instagram me at Planet Scipio. Thank you for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.